It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Stacey Higginbotham is here. Jeff Jarvis has the week off, but that's okay. Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land joins us as we talk about Google and authority, fake news, and how you distinguish between the two. We also talk about a very big scam going on with Google Docs right now and some great tips, including a way to make Mr. T give you directions the next time you drive. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 403, recorded Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. Leo has shared a Google Doc with you. This Week in Google is brought to you by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit Upside.com and enter the code TWIG, and you're guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse, which includes the Webverse, the Internetverse, the Facebookverse, the chapter and verse. Stacey Higginbotham's here from the Internet of Things podcast, IoTpodcast.com. Hello, Stacey.
Hello. I thought you were going to just say the Internet of Things verse.
It is the IoT verse. Actually, there's some IoT news. We'll talk about it. Also, Danny Sullivan from SearchEngineLand.com and MarketingEngineLand.com. Hello, Danny.
Hello.
And I see the Starship Enterprise on the shelf to your right there. That's pretty...
Oh, yeah, I switched it out.
Pretty sweet.
That's there. My giant
NCC
Megablocks
1701.
Really? Enterprise.
Really?
It's very good.
You can make that on
Megablocks. Lego didn't get the license Megablocks did, and it was a very different kind of a build, but I was very excited to get it.
Interesting.
It's nice. I can't show you, but the little things on the end, the engines will glow even. So it's very good.
Nice. Nice. So before you go any further, please do not open any links in a Google Doc you may have received. Apparently, this is breaking this afternoon. A massive phishing campaign targeting Google accounts. Journalists particularly targeted. They are malicious links, and apparently, if you click on it, you will then give permission to something called Google Docs, which isn't Google Docs, and it gives it access to your Gmail. It can read, send, delete, and manage your email on your behalf. How nice!
That is scary.
How nice! You can remove it. You should remove it. Here's Tom Warren with his tweet. Apparently, he's got a good screenshot, so I'm thinking he might have got bit.
Yeah.
The emails, I think a lot of us have received it.
Did you get it, Stacey?
I got one, but it was after the clicking. Or after
the clicking?
Don't click.
Wow. How does it show up? Does it show up in a document?
It says it's an email.
Oh, it's an email.
Inviting you to the document.
Ah. Apparently, it comes from mailinator.com, and the recipients are BCC'd. Is it your habit to just go ahead and open those shared documents?
I usually look, but because that looks sort of legit, I might have, like, if I was flipping through, I might just click it and be like, oh, did one of my editors send me something? Click.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's caught a bunch of people that ordinarily wouldn't get caught by something like that. So it looks like it was fairly sophisticated. Well, I got two of them, but people had gone around saying, no, don't open this by that point. So I was like, phew. Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who went this way before I happened to.
Well, and I'm protected because I don't actually ever read my email.
Oh, well, there you go. Must be nice.
Although, I'm looking at the one I got right now, and it looks just like what you got. That would have been an alarm to me. Like, it's like, it's invited you to open this document, and that whole two HHHHH, I'd be like, what?
Yeah, this is definitely weird. If you're just flipping through. But I mean, I don't know. Some days when my, like, if I get back from a meeting or something, or I've been on the phone, my inbox is like, you're just like clicking through, you know?
Well, so. And notice, by the way, this one appears to come from Joe Bernstein at BuzzFeed.com. It isn't, in fact. And it says Joe Bernstein invited you to the follow your document. I don't know if that's customized for whoever it's aimed at. But you could easily not realize that it actually came from HHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHHH
a legitimate contact.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I didn't get one. I'm sad. I'm hurt.
Like, do you want me to send you one? I mean, we can make that happen.
And do we know if anybody got bit by, like, besides, I mean, anybody who clicked would have...
Well, apparently, I mean, the Vice article I read was that it was all over Twitter and that several journalists, like several unnamed journalists have been infected. I think some people were Vice.
Wow.
So, I'm doing a quick search on Google for Google Docs. There's certainly plenty of coverage of it. Yeah. It looked very sophisticated in the sense that it, I think, all seemed to come up off of a Google domain, or I think that's how it was meant to look as well. So,
wow, look at the Petaluma City Schools sent me an email saying there's a widespread email scam. Do not open. So, that went out 30 minutes ago.
That makes sense, actually. My kids, my imaginary other child, my kid is on Google Docs.
Right. The schools use Chromebooks and Google Docs. Yeah. So they
you would think at this point, though, it's something that Google would somehow be able to identify and stop. Like if you clicked on the link, because if I understood it, like the link took you into a Google domain. Like it looked like there was some kind of actual app that was running off of Google's domain. It's not that Google created it, but you know, you can create pages on Google's domain. You can create, you know, all sorts of things that actually have a Google URL because Google has these common things that are licensed out. So, I'm spinning through articles myself to try to see. Vox has one. What we know and how it works. So
what we know, how it works. Wow. All right. Well, I'm glad we led with that because presumably there are people watching live who may be bit with it.
We've done good work here.
We have done our job. We can go home. Thank you, everybody. Good night. I would love it. You're right. This shouldn't be possible.
I'm sure Google is working on this right now.
There needs to be malware protection in.
It says that, like, it takes you to Google's real login page, apparently. And then when you enter your password, you get redirected to a third-party site.
Ah.
So what's happening and how they're taking
you to
their
Google's
password
OAuth.
Page, I don't know. Hmm. I can't tell enough of what's happening, but that's one of those things you think Google would do. At the very least, Google, you know, could put a big thing up on their password login page right now saying, warning.
I don't think they want to do that.
Two factor,
but that wouldn't save you either.
I don't know, would it?
Not if it's there.
Giving you if you want to change your password. So presumably, once you get access to the account's password, you try to change it. So like, the person couldn't get in.
Yeah, I don't know when you're giving permission to another site, and then I don't know if like when you authorize another site, if it needs to have two factor or not.
So here's in the Google subreddit. It used the existing Google login system. So that's actually interesting.
That's really scary.
Yeah, because that means they were using OAuth. They had set up a page to use Google's OAuth.
Oh, look at that. It does bypass two-factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Send scam emails to everyone.
Oh, and then, so the first thing they do once they get Gmail permissions is to spread it. And that's why it's coming to you from someone you know.
Yes, that's why. Like, I won't share with you who sent me mine. So
right. Somebody you know. By the way, though, you should email them back and say you were infected because that's the sign. If you get it from somebody, it's the sign that they were bit.
They know.
They know.
Yep.
I won't ask how they know.
I'm like, you know, it's the same public service message you offer all your friends when you're suddenly like, oh, dude.
Dude,
your Skype's been spammed.
You just got bit.
It's been a long time, though, since.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the Skype one. that was fairly recent. But other than that, it's been quite a while since I've had to do that. It used to be like, you know, like once a month, one of your friends would have something, you know.
It is apparently spread quite severely. Our chat room, Reverend Denson and Amini is telling me in the chat room, the three universities he does work with have sent out the email that I got from the Petaluma schools. It's pretty widespread, and it makes sense. That's what's scary about this kind of attack. Email is instant, and this stuff spreads so fast. It's one of the reasons antiviruses are of dubious value these days. You're going to get a virus within minutes that will take a day for them to modify their software to detect. If you clicked allow, if you did log in and clicked allow, you're done. If you didn't click the link, close the tab, or press deny, you're okay.
What was that a thing from something like HHH? If they're, what was that thing again?
Well, HHH Mailinator HHH.
That's the email. That's the actual email it's from. But it won't say that. It will say from somebody you know. And it will say CC'd to HHHHH. If you did get bit, revoke access to Google Docs, because this quote, Google Docs, is not Google Docs. And the real one doesn't need access because it's your Google account. So if you see in your access list Google Docs, that's bad. And then you'll look in your sent box because those are people you just spammed.
Wait.
And inform whoever sent you the email, of course, that their account's been compromised, as Stacy did.
It sounds like Google shutting it down. Is Google, has it been stopped?
That's an interesting question. Could they, what do you think, Danny? Could they somehow?
Well, if that's looked like what they said.
Globally revoke the permission?
If you're going to their password page, I don't understand how when you go to that password page, it's
a Google app
doing this other type of thing.
They created a web app in
Google. It sounds like it's some kind of application that has gotten into their system to use that password page in some official way. And they should be able to block that. They should be able to say, well, we know what's happening here because it's all sending back to this other thing.
So. I guess. So if you authorized it, you're authorizing an application that by now, presumably, Google has shut down.
Yes. And I guess someone in the chat room saying that Google did disable the app.
Okay. So it's all right. You're safe.
Well, are you? I mean, if you go in and change your password, you're safe. But otherwise,
no, they didn't get your password.
They still have access.
They did not get your password. They used Google's own system, which does not give them a password. It merely authenticates. And then you add this bogus web app to your account, which then mines your Gmail. We don't know if there's an additional payload. That's unknown at this point.
Okay, I was what is the point of this?
What else are they doing, right? Yeah. Did they grab all your contacts?
Grabbed all your email, but I doubt they did because of the quantity of data that would be.
Yeah, it's a lot of email you got to be downloading.
Yeah. But. You know, it's very possible, and I'm sure Google's actually looking, because now Google has access to their source code. So I'm sure Google is looking at their app to see what else it did. It may well be that the only purpose of the app was to spread itself, which would be kind of an interesting joke.
Mm.
But there's no further compromise as far as I know, because you use Google's own authentication system. See, there's an important distinction. I'm sure everybody watching knows that. But you can make a page that looks like a Google login page and steal people's credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, how can you tell if that's what you're getting or if you're getting a real Google authentication? Maybe it's a pop-up.
Well, I mean, you know, usually your first clue is to look at what's in your address field, right? Because, you know, it should look like it's coming.
The pop-up doesn't have an address field.
Oh, you mean when it comes to the pop-up? Well, I'd probably be wary if you're getting a pop-up then, too, because, like, why are you getting that kind of a pop-up type of thing?
But the pop-up is what Google does.
Now, when I go and I try to authenticate something, it usually takes me to a page where I have to do that.
It does? You don't get a...
And that's why. And now Barry Schwartz, our news editor, is telling me you can read the link. But I mean, like, if you can find the link, and like I said, in most cases, I usually see it. It's in a browser, and I can see the link. you can tell. And Barry is saying, if you get the pop-up, right-click, and you should be able to use an option that lets you see the link. And the link should generally be from a Google domain, not something like, you know, such-and-such-dot-google, et cetera, et cetera. Even further advice is coming in from Barry Schwartz saying, right-click, copy the link, and paint it into Notepad so that you can see it better. So,
well, let's use as an example. I'll do it. I'll do it right now.
Do it.
This is unroll.me, which you absolutely do not want to sign up for, right?
What's your password?
No. This is
your mother's maiden name.
This is the authentication box you get, and you get this from many people.
Where is this at?
This is Unroll.me, which is something you do not want to sign up for. We've talked about that.
Yeah, okay.
Because you got to sign up with Google, Yahoo, Outlook, or AOL. Those are all. This is OAuth, too. This is the. Mm-hmm. So when I click this, I should get an OAuth dialog.
Let's see what we got.
Continue.
Awesome.
And that's what I'm talking. I guess it is a page. And then you're right. You can see at the top. You can see at the top. But the problem is people look at these.
Ought to, if you have two-factor, trigger the two-factor to come in as well.
It will. I do have two-factor, so the next step will be.
And if it were a fake system, then I don't think you would get the two-factor because, you know, it's not going to be able to, Google system is going to work with it.
This says https://accounts.google.com. The problem is you might also see accounts.google.com.tv.com or something else.
Right.
And you've got to look at the whole thing between the slashes. You should also look at the certificate. You see, it says secure, and I can learn more about my secure connection. Oh, you know, this annoys me. Google changed how this works. By the way,
going to change again too.
It used to give you a chance to look at the certificate right here, and it doesn't. And this is really annoying. In order to get the certificate, you now actually have to go elsewhere on the page. I'm going to close this, get back here. To get this certificate, I think I have to go over to, this is crazy. Is it developer tools? I think I do. And then security and view certificate. That is, I'm really sad that Google did that. That was a change fairly recently in Chrome. And so that's too many steps. It should be I could right-click on secure. Ask Barry that. I should be able to click on secure and say, see certificate right over here. Instead, this is crazy. Developer tools, which normally opens here or here, but you go and the word security is off the menu to the right, security.
But I mean, to be honest, I don't even think most people are going to get to the point where they're going to try to look at a certificate and understand if it's telling them what
that's
it's saying.
That's why we want it to be easy, because if you could pop up the certificate, it says issued to star.google.com. Mm-hmm. And then you can verify it. That should be a much easier thing than this ridiculous developer's tool. That's not the way to do it, Google. And I was a little disappointed that they changed that recently. Anyway, because I check certificates a lot. All right. Well, should I just go ahead? All right. I'm going to click and see if it asks for my two-factor. Oh, I don't know. Should I allow Unroll Me to get my mail? Now wait a minute. I guess it's not going to ask for my two-factor. Because remember, I'm logged in into Chrome on this. So it. Anyway, let's just deny. Deny. I deny you. Oops, looks like you declined access. Damn straight. What made you decline? I'm worried about security. That's in there twice, by the way, so that's clearly a popular answer. I'm really, we use security. Yeah, bank level security as well as your emails provide a security. Yeah, you're really secure. Bye. All right.
We encrypt your data before we sell the metadata on.
Exactly. So did I make a mistake? I just read an article said that you shouldn't buy a new Pixel right now. This is a bad time to buy a Google Pixel.
A Pixel phone?
Pixel phone.
Why? Oh.
Because, well.
Was there a good time to buy it?
Yeah. It's the best Android phone.
Yeah.
You disagree? I love it. Well, I had bought the little one.
I have one. I like it.
I bought the little one, and then I decided I wanted a big one. This was after I got the Galaxy S8 because I thought, the S8, that's the future.
You should definitely get the big.
Yeah.
Just all big phones from now on.
Yeah, only big phones.
No,
I know it's got a bezel.
Stop. No. Only big. Not in the big phone club, but keep going.
Why I got the little phone. I thought maybe I'm not in the big phone club.
Because I used to have an iPhone 6, S, and then I got the 7 and the big one, and like look at the S now. I'm like, I can't deal
plus.
With that.
You got the plus.
Got the plus. So, and then the same thing with the Pixel. So I thought, well, the Pixel will be great. I'll get the small one. That'll be awesome. Yeah. And like, no, it wasn't awesome.
I just want the big one. So I traded it in for the big one. I got the big one. Because I thought I was going to use the S8, I thought the S8's. And then,
is that you traded in? That's awesome.
I didn't trade it in.
You had multiple Pixels.
I said that so that people wouldn't think that I was just throwing money away.
So you got the big Pixel.
Yeah, I traded it in.
Yeah.
I put the old one in the drawer. And I got a new one.
Yeah, I completely
understand. You could at least sell it on eBay.
I will do something with it. You know what I actually do? And I give it to the staff members. I saw yesterday, Burke was about to order a 6P. I said, stop. Don't order a 6P. I've got phones up the butt. He said, I don't want a phone.
They certainly don't want a phone that came from up your butt.
No.
So actually, I gave him the little one, the little Pixel. He says, it's too small.
Yeah.
So, but he has now the HTC U Ultra, which is big. But I'm going to keep the S8. I got the S8 Plus, and I like it, but I don't like it enough. I think Samsung junked it up, and it reminded me how much I like the Pixel.
The pure Android, it's nice.
It's
it is
so
nice.
Much nicer.
And if you like Android, I think going with a Google branded phone is great. Unless you want to go for Motorola, which pretty much doesn't mess with them too much either.
Motorola is a good choice, but.
It's just so expensive.
Tell me about it. Anyway, David Ruddock, writing at Android Police, said, even if you can, which, by the way, you can now. I thought it was going to be a long wait. It was a week. Even if you can, you probably shouldn't buy a Google Pixel anymore. I'm not sure I agree with this. He says this is kind of the ultimate in spec geekiness. The Snapdragon 821 is old news. Oh, come on. It doesn't support advanced network features across the four carriers, which aren't available yet anyway, right? Okay. And then he says the Pixel 2 is coming out. Well, yeah, but in September or October.
That's not that far now, though.
This is it's May. May,
that's
June,
not
July,
that's a long time.
August. That's 6 months from now. Minimum.
Nurse your phone along. Nurse it along. You think your phone you got now can't last 6 months? What's it doing? Going, I can barely walk now. I just give up.
He also points out that Google has told people that we will stop supporting it October 2018 and stop doing security updates like a year after that. I'm a little disappointed. I thought Google was going to support these like they supported Nexus. I just got...
I thought Google was going to have things like, proper inventory so you could buy them.
I know, but
This was like Google. No, we're really serious about our phones, which is like the third time they've been serious about phones, right? Because we had the Nexus when they first came out with the Nexus, and then we did different things. Like now we've got the Super Nexus, and then it was like, and now it was like we've got the Pixel. We're really super serious about this phone. We're running ad campaigns. It's got Google Assistant, everybody, and then you can't buy it. That doesn't tell me you were super serious about the phone. That tells me it was still kind of like a little bit of a hobby. Well, I get not wanting to gamble on getting a bunch of inventory because you're not certain if you'll actually sell it. But it also then when people do want to buy it and they can't buy it, I want to say, that doesn't happen with Apple, but of course it does happen with Apple. But that happens with Apple because there's so much demand, not because Apple goes, well, let's only produce a little bit and see if anybody's interested. So
I do not understand why Apple can't keep AirPods in stock. I don't understand why Google can't keep this phone in stock. It seems to be a epidemic in the tech industry that they just can't make them fast enough. I don't know why that is. But I think you should buy a Pixel XL if you need a phone right now. Obviously, if you can limp along for 5.5 months, fine.
Yeah, you know what? If you need a phone right now, you could easily get a good solid $200 phone if you wanted to.
Okay.
If you wanted to
get a Moto G, get the fifth generation Moto G.
If you wanted to get to the fall when the long generation phones are going to come out, right?
And he does make a good point, which is that this was a flawed. The Pixel was a flawed phone out of the box that Google had rushed it out and had to compromise. It's not waterproof. Doesn't have wireless charging. There are a lot of issues with it. It does have, I will submit, the best camera on the market, better than the iPhone.
The camera's nice.
Better than the Galaxy S8 even. You could argue that the dual lenses on the LG G6 make it more attractive. I've seen some really nice wide angle.
I lent one to my son to try because he was all into photography.
The G6 or the Pixel?
No, the Pixel. And he would totally be using the Pixel because of the camera.
Yes.
If only it could do Apple Messages.
Yeah. blame Apple for that. I know.
But bastards. That's the lock-in for him now. Yep. All his friends use Messages, and no one wants to be, they can't do group chat.
Nobody wants to be a green bubble anymore. I don't want to be the green bubble.
How did we get back to here?
I know. Here? All right. Stacey, you've been very critical of my story choices.
No, I wasn't thinking of the story. I was thinking because you were complaining about iMessages, and I was going all the way.
I could complain about Allo. I could complain about Allo. Allo. That's Hangouts. What's wrong with Google?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I feel like we're all the way back in the early aughts again.
Oh, you didn't mean us. Yeah. You meant in general.
No, not you talking.
It's
we're all using
AIM and ICQ.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, oh, how did that happen? That was more like just an aside. It was not a criticism of your story choice.
I'm very sensitive.
Is that a Surface Studio sitting in front of you now?
Yeah. What do you think, baby?
I think it looks really nice.
It's awesome for this. Look at this. I can zoom in.
It looks really nice.
I can. Look at this. Let's go to search. Let me go to search engine land and show you how good.
Good
your site looks.
I just want you to put that weird circle thing up there and do something awesome with that.
Oh, I watched. Yeah. Nice. Oh, I can do that. Look, I can scroll. Look, see, it's got a knob.
Oh, shut
your
up.
Site now has a knob on it. Look at that. And you're really gonna like this. Let's get a really good story from
Danny Sullivan story.
Right at the top.
Which one? This one? How Google assesses
authority.
That was my next story. So I really like to make it big so everybody can read it. And then let's say Danny says something really interesting. Watch this. I can then go, look at this. Danny's talking about PageRank. Google didn't just reward pages with a lot of links. It tried to calculate how by the way, this is really germane to our conversation last week, isn't it, Stacey?
Yes, it is. I was like, I saw this and I was like, it's so sad that Jeff is not here to talk about this today. Since you wrote this, we can ask you all the hard questions.
Yeah, we fought for 40 minutes last week on this. Battled it out.
Was there some kind of a fight? Because I got a tweet, somebody saying that I needed to fight more or something. I was like, but I wasn't even on the show.
So I should let you recap the battle, Stacey. And I will if you don't want to. But
oh God! So
I have a dog in this hunt, as they say in Austin, Texas.
I used that phrase just yesterday. Anyway, so Leo is of the opinion that Google is going. It's losing.
Authority.
The moral high ground. Yeah. Authority. There you go. When it comes to starting to dictate what's truth and how it's going to show things and what has authority. And Jeff is of the opinion that because Google is an authority that we turn to, it should favor absolute truth like science. And then we got into this whole digression of absolute truth and algorithms being biased. And it was a long, long time.
Jeff, as you know, is part of the Facebook Craigslist integrity initiative in journalism. In fact, CUNY, his university, has kind of been charged to keep track of news integrity and kind of to divvy out the money. They put aside a lot of money to help people, advertisers and platforms do a better job with fake news. My concern, and this is actually right up your alley, Danny, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. My concern is that in my opinion, in the early days of Google, the whole point was to reflect what's on the internet and to rank it using PageRank based on other pages' interest in it. You know, it ranks more highly because that's what more people are talking about. And not to judge the veracity of the content, not to judge the content at all. And I'm concerned that if Google starts getting in the business of judging the content of pages, that is a serious kind of, I think it breaks PageRank. It breaks my fear is that, talk about filter bubbles, now you've got a Silicon Valley company as the ultimate arbiter of truth. And that worries me.
So, gosh, where to unpack? In Google's original system that was called PageRank, they talked about it as being the democracy of the web. And the idea was that links could be like votes. And so the pages right. that got the most votes or the most links potentially would win. But, and this is what the article I talk about today goes into, it was never just a counting game. Even from the start, they tried to figure that some links were more equal than others.
They did think about quality. They thought about the quality of the links. And, so, and we acknowledge that they've had to do that. I mean, that's what Matt Cutts did with his spam fighting.
Right. And then in addition, they didn't just look at the popularity, but they also would look at, say, the context of the links. This is why, you know, you would find Amazon at the time. You search for books, Amazon would come up for number one. But if you search for cars, you wouldn't find Amazon, because even though Amazon had a lot of links and a lot of important links, nobody was linking to Amazon saying cars in or near the link. So it wasn't contextually relevant. And I think that when you talk about back when it started, the idea of like just fake content or untruthful content or, you know, debatable topics, I don't think you had as much of it that was going on. Instead, you know, you had relatively lots of authoritative content. Not perfect. There was obviously such as an issue, but the real challenge, you know, back then was simply the people who were trying to spam and completely mislead and completely try to rank the search algorithm so that they would just get monetary gain or some other benefit off of it without having any real relevancy. You know, people will debate whether or not SEO is just spamming, and it's not, because Google even will tell you should do it. And, you know, if you're relevant and it makes sense for you to be doing it, it's a good thing you should be happening and doing. But, you know, you go into extremes, or you can have just outright misleading stuff. But it wasn't like I'm trying to alter your opinion necessarily. It was more like I'm just trying to hijack some traffic. You know, these days you have a lot of content that's out there. We're in this sort of post-truth world that's going on. And yeah, I think that Google does need to figure out how to deal with it. And I think it's perhaps a little too freak out prone to say that Google is preventing you from getting to content, or they're putting you into a bubble by some of the changes that they're trying to do. One of the challenges, first of all, they literally don't know what's authoritative. And that's part of what the article I got into today was explaining. There's no signal that they look at and say, well, now that's an authority, or here, that's truth. They don't know what truth is. And how could they know what truth is when you even get into some issues where even we as humans don't know what the truth is, right? So what they're trying to do is look at a bucket of metrics to figure out whether or not something seemed to have some authority. And the change that they made wasn't – I saw a little bit of what Jeff wrote, and he was like, you know, Google's now going to weight more towards authority. That's not new. It's not like Google just suddenly decided to weight more towards authority. What's new is that they're going to weight more towards authority when you start getting into more granular kinds of searches. So if you had searched for Holocaust, it wasn't like Google said, you searched for the Holocaust? Well, authority, we don't care about that. They would give you really authoritative sites. But when you would search for things like, did the Holocaust happen? Google would say, well, that's not a very common search that happens. So you might really want something that's more granular and more specific. Just like if, say, you search for a weird computer error that you got, you might type in the computer error. You don't want to get some page off of CNET that says computer errors are bad. You want a page that specifically talks about that error. And so Google's algorithms in these specific searches would tend to skew towards, let's go for the very specific content, even if it doesn't necessarily have as much authority as it seems like it needs to have. So then when you would search for, did the Holocaust happen, you'd end up with pages telling you the Holocaust didn't happen. They were the only pages discussing it, because people weren't writing a lot of content explaining why it really did happen, because so many people understand it's an accepted fact. It's just like why you wouldn't find a lot of content necessarily on why the Earth is flat.
And so I just did that. It's funny you should say that.
I'm sure you'll get some, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, mostly what I got is proofs that the Earth's not flat.
Right, right. But see, so, you know, but then that's been kind of a joke thing that's come up. So then people...
Maybe that's not the best one. And you do get the Flat Earth Society, but it's not in the top
links. It's not, but, you know, and then it's... But so they would skew towards these granular things, and then you would get sites that are out there. And it's like, is that the best thing to be doing? And the algorithm isn't perfect. The algorithm has to make decisions all the time. So you could say, well, if they go to more authoritative content, they're biasing it. Well, if they don't go to more authoritative content, they're biasing it. The algorithm is not unbiased. The algorithm is going to have a bias just like anything that makes decisions.
The point that both Jeff and Stacey did make.
Yeah.
So there is bias inherent in it.
So
I think that doesn't give you permission to add more bias.
Well, I don't even know what more
bias. Wouldn't you want to have as little bias as possible?
No, there's no such thing as little bias.
Bias isn't. Yeah, there's bias. Yeah, you can't have less or more of it. You can double down on a position that's biased, but.
Well, I would say use as little bias as possible to give you good search results. Obviously, part of the problem is that quality is hard to define. But let's assume
that quality is bias. I mean, if you're choosing quality, like let's take it away from search for a minute.
Okay,
if
that makes sense. Yeah.
If I'm picking a table,
that's a matter of taste. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it's quality is part of the bias. I may choose to spend more for that. So, right. Sorry.
No. So presuming that Google's going to have to define the word quality in some fashion, And I think the way they define it is a quality link is the link that gives you what you're looking for.
Well, actually, they don't define quality.
They don't want to. I know they don't want to, but they have to. It's implicit
That's
in what
like
they're doing.
That's like defining pornography.
No, but they have to because it's implicit in what they're doing. So even if they don't want to say, they have somewhere in that algorithm a definition of a quality.
I would define it as... They don't want to generate search results that make a lot of people's eyebrows go up and say, "What are you doing?"
Well,
right?
that's the kind of example. Okay, let's assume that. That kind of is my point, which is people's eyebrows going up isn't always a good metric for whether that information is important. And in fact, people's eyebrows went up, as I brought up last week. I don't want to get in this whole thing again, that was it Galileo who said that the Earth revolves around the sun? Their eyebrows went up.
Sure.
No, I don't think so. And so that's not the best metric in a lot of areas, including science. That's not the best metric.
I think part of the difference is if Galileo had published something today out on the web, first of all, even then, he was respected, right? So he would be publishing with some degree of authority. It would be recent, so it would show up as part of the news discussion that would be happening. It's not like it would just be like, oh, well, that freaks us out. We're going to get rid of it. And you'd have almost like an immediate debate about what was going on from there. So I don't know. It's this. I get what you're concerned about with the filter bubble. There are good reasons to be worried about that. Those actually are reasons you'd be more worried about the personalization of search that Google's done since like 2009, not because of their shift with authority, right? Because everybody sees different results. You do a search there, I do a search here.
Yeah, but that's the filter bubble part I reject that I don't worry about.
So wait, okay, yeah. Let's take your Galileo example and say that is a bad example. Not because it doesn't fit your argument, but because in that time frame, there was not a rapid fire discussion among people who were deemed authoritative. There was the church and people like mailing letters back and forth, which is not. So Google, it doesn't make sense to argue that in relation to the world we live in now with Google and how information is talked about and shared now. So picking quality today, Galileo, like Danny said, Galileo would have a much easier time of it because other people would see his stuff. The church would not.
He'd be shouted down. That's the problem, so is that people with controversial opinions are shouted down.
And that was controversial for the church.
Well, all right, then don't use Galileo. But people with you will acknowledge that people with controversial opinions today get shouted
down.
So
remember the dude who said autism, that truth is vaccines not, cost...
Yeah, but truth is not democratic.
Vaccines cause autism.
Yeah.
Scientists were like, whoop, that's crazy. But a lot of people were like, oh, that makes a lot of sense to me. And that was something that got hold, even though it wasn't true. And he came back later and said, yeah, I made all that up. So,
but I think it's also important to understand that it's not – the change that Google's making doesn't mean that the results are necessarily going to be clean of controversial opinions or you know
– Yeah, I like what you said about it. The more granular you search, the more likely you're going to get those oddball opinions is the general
– but If you're gonna do a search for did the Holocaust happen, and right. The first thing that they were listing was a white supremacist site telling you that it wasn't, and then virtually all the rest of the page was made up from denial stuff.
Let me ask you this: somebody in the chat,
out there.
Somebody in the chat room kind of encapsulated my thinking very well. And let me ask you if this is nuts to say this. But he said, oh, I should find it. He said, I think it was Reverb Mike. Yeah. Google's the card catalog, not the periodical section. Do you know what I mean by that?
It's both.
Well, it's both, but if so, okay.
But it's also too simplistic an argument because your card catalog is, I want some books on this topic, and the librarian comes back and says, here are 5 books, right?
See,
because
that's what I thought Google did.
These are all the
did.
Books we have in the library.
Right.
Google has 500,000 books on any search you want to ask for.
Right.
So it could dump 500,000 books at you, but that's not very helpful. It has to sort them in some way. It has to decide which ones it thinks are the most important ones that it tried to show you. And that's what actually a librarian would have done in a library if there were a lot of choices. And I just don't know. I'm trying to get started on this topic.
Right.
They
so
might
here's
say, well, you know, they know a really good book.
Yeah. See, a library actually is curation, but the card catalog's not. The card catalog is an attempt to be complete. But Google doesn't do that because it would be unusable. You don't want a million research results. You want them in order.
I get the goal that we want to have unbiased.
You're just saying it's impossible, and that's my question.
There aren't unbiased things.
Yeah.
And I also get what you're saying about, well, I don't want it to be as biased, but I think it's easy to think of being too biased in terms of, say, political views. Do you want Google to be more liberal and less conservative? Not really. I don't think people would agree they want them to do that.
Very much not,
And
that's my concern.
Right. But the idea of saying, well, I don't want it to be as authoritative because I want to get, I don't know, less stuff. I get that as well, but then it's like just trying to find I think they are trying to find the balance that's in there in a way that provides results that work for most people most of the time.
And this is why I'm glad you were
really
here.
If you really want to find some of these sites and you really want to dive deep, it's not like the sites aren't in Google.
Right.
It's not like you can't locate them.
That reassures me. You actually crystallized it for me because you said a general search, the more general a search, the more they're going to impose an order on it, the more specific a search, the more likely you're going to find the variation of thinking on that. And that actually is, I think, a good way to compromise. So if you search for Holocaust, that's different from searching, you know, did the Holocaust happen? Or even more, I want to read Holocaust denier sites because Google would give you those.
Yes, if you were explicitly – and that is a different thing, right? Like if you just like want to find Holocaust denial sites, Google lists them and you can find them by searching for
them. And that actually reassures me because then that gives me
– And that goes into the other thing too, which is part of the change they made, which was not to detour you into some of these weird areas, right? You search for Holocaust and it suggests did the Holocaust happen, and all of a sudden it sent you off into this very specific, you know, discussion, which is not really what you were intending.
Well, this came up because of snippets, right? So in a snippet, it would say no. Is climate change real? Yes, because a snippet is Google deciding what is factual. But that's different from search results.
Yeah.
And snippets are really the most problematical thing here.
Yeah. And that's why you can still search for who invented homework and Google will tell you it was Roberto Nivelles in 1095 in Venice. Oh, yeah, it's still up. It'll be up forever. It'll be up forever. Oh, my God.
Okay. I didn't mean to bring this back, Stacey. I know this is a well-worn.
How did we get here?
Well, but we had Danny on. He wrote this article on Authority. I thought this was an appropriate.
Just kind of looking at the surface. And he was making my
I'm glad. Yeah, right. You started, Dan. I'm glad that you were here because I think you actually did say that's something that reassured me. And because of your deep understanding of how Google works, that actually is reassuring. General is one thing, specific is another. Snippets, forget about it.
You did move the conversation forward, Dan.
Didn't he? Yep. She's grudgingly admitting that.
I'm not great. I am thankful, especially if that means we don't have to come back to it.
Yeah, poor Stacey is so tired of my bete noire, my obsessions.
We all have our. I have crazy obsessions.
What's your obsession? What will you bring up every time on this show?
Oh, probably net neutrality.
Okay, let's do it. Let's take a break. Let's do it. There's some. There's quite a bit of news on net neutrality. We're gonna fuel Stacey's obsession next.
Oh, dear.
And then we want to talk about Google's results because there's a lot to parse there, too. Our show today brought to you by the best new way to search for business travel, Upside. I fell in love with Upside over the last few months. We book a lot of business travel. And, you know, when I was at Ziff Davis, big company, there was literally a travel bureau. There were people you would call and they would book your travel for you and do the whole thing. And they had pre-negotiated prices with the airlines and the hotels. And that was awesome. But most businesses aren't that big. Our business isn't. So Upside kind of does it for you. Upside is the best new way for small and medium-sized businesses to book their business travel. Comes to you from Jay Walker, who founded Priceline. And, you know, after his great success with Priceline, he thought, where else can I make the world a better place? It bundles flights and hotels together for one low price. You will save a lot of money. And then Upside is very smart. They have a little bonus for the people doing the travel booking, a free gift card with every trip you book. And good gift cards, too. Amazon. There's actually, you can see a variety of gift cards when you look at the website. Go to upside.com. And check it out. In fact, do a trial booking. Just see, you know, compare it to other sites. See what you get. I think you're going to be really pleased with the results. There's no need to spend time with a long, you know, elaborate list of choices and prices. Upside instantly finds the best 6 flights and hotels. You get to choose, by the way, no mysteries. You get to choose the hotel by name, airline by name, flight time. You still get all your frequent flyer miles and everything. They have great 24/7 concierge-level customer service. You can call them, you can email them, you can chat with them or reach them on social. And that is before, during, and after every trip. So that's really nice to have that. That's one of the things a good travel agent gives you, is someone to call if the flight, you know, got delayed or canceled. If you're a frequent business traveler, your company's going to save a ton of money. And you are going to get a gift card worth $100, $200, even $300. Now, when we do it, because we're paying for the travel, we just apply the gift card right there to the cost of the flight or the cost of the hotel. So you can apply it directly. But if you're doing it, because your company makes you do it, you get to keep the gift card. You actually get even more with overseas trips. You'll get the gift card via email within 72 hours after booking. You don't have to wait till you travel. There's no limit on trips or gift cards. And the gift cards are for a variety of different businesses, Target, Nordstrom, Amazon, 50 different brands. They even have a hub where you can keep track of your gift cards. This is just a win for everybody all around. Book your business travel at upside.com. By the way, use a promo code TWIG when you do it. That'll let them know you heard it here, which is good for us. And it'll guarantee a $100 minimum gift card on your first trip. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. Offer code TWIG. This is all we use now. Once we discovered this, it was like, and I did get to talk. I said, "Can you know, before we do the ads, can I talk to Jay?" And Jay is like such a character. And I said, "Was William Shatner your idea for the Priceline ads?" He said, "Yes, it was." Yes, it was. That was like in 1999 or something, 2000. And
yes.
And I said, Bill owes you a great debt because it made him the hippiest guy in the world. It was great for Bill and obviously great for Priceline. This isn't Priceline, it's Upside. It's Jay's newest and it's awesome. Let's see. And who knew that Bill Shatner could do karate, right? or sort of. So Stacy has a little obsession, and I don't blame her. And it's something we call internet freedom. Thank goodness Congress has decided to vote for internet freedom. I'm just seeing if that'll set her off.
This is just a bill proposal, and people propose bills all the time. But you'll notice that my two senators from Texas, home of AT&T, are...
The Restore Internet Freedom Act. What does it do? It makes sure the FCC will never again. Thank you, Mitch McConnell, Marco Rubio. Thank you, Tom Cotton. Thank you, Ted Cruz. Thank you, Mike Lee. Thank you, Rand Paul. We'll never again try to enforce net neutrality. That's freedom. Freedom if you're a big ISP, anyway. Not so much for people.
What's so tough about this story is, holy cow, I mean, having complained about this forever and tried to cover it forever, this is such a hard sell to normal people. Like, you look at the hubbub, rightly so, about ACA and health insurance issues. People are like, people get that. And the Senate and the House are still trying to cram something that what looks to be like many Americans are not in favor of. But when it comes to net neutrality, it is so hard to make this fun.
I kind of blame Tim Wu because it's the worst possible name. Yeah. They should say I'm against internet discrimination or something like that, right?
Yeah, but here's the deal. The carriers are... These people have been lobbying the governments, like AT&T and Verizon, for over 100 years. This is not a new game for them. They're in it for the long haul. And so, you know, originally we talked about discrimination and then people got mad because how can you define what discrimination is, especially on our networks? We know what it is. So people tried to get away from that because...
So
the
neutral,
words became tainted.
Safer. You're going to be
neutral.
Net neutrality means you're not going to weigh in on the bits. All bits are equal.
Right.
Now, Ted Cruz says net neutrality is Obamacare for the internet.
Ted, don't.
What the hell does that even mean? What does it even mean?
It's a great soundbite. Obamacare for the internet.
What does that even mean? Well,
lot of people like Obamacare.
No, it's clear that the word Obama applied to anything will make it bad. So this Restoring Internet Freedom Act, by the way, you're right. It's not a bill yet. It's just perhaps a bill. But it would
they just call it trickle down internetnomics.
You know, I'll say it again. I said it last week and I think
itonomics.
This really, when somebody said this, I saw a tweet. I wish I could give the guy credit. He said, net neutrality, what the FCC tried to do, does not regulate the internet. It regulates companies called internet service providers who want to break the internet. It tells them you may not break the internet. It is not internet regulation. It's not saying what can happen on the internet. It's saying companies who provide internet to people shall not. Now, this is the opposite, and this is where... You know, we're really in an Orwellian, actually, what is it, 1984, where, you know, peace is war and truth is, you
right.
know, lies are truth. This is, what do they call that speak?
Double speak.
This is double speak. This is not the Restoring Internet Freedom Act. This is the Restoring the Rights of Internet Service Providers to Gouge You Act. It would nullify the open internet order, and it would prohibit the FCC from ever issuing a similar ruling. Now, remember, I did say that it's up to what happened. The internet's been nullified. My screen just It's black now.
Wait, this isn't episode 404 yet. What's happening?
I did say last week Congress has to decide, not the FCC. It's appropriate to say, Congress, what do you think? And I think if they made this a bill, they might see some opposition on the floor of the House and the Senate.
Now, what really stuck in their craw the last time was that after... Was Tom Wheeler kind of being a little wishy-washy on whether or not he was going to implement Title II?
He was.
He was. And then I think it was, I'm not sure if the timeline totally meshes up, if it was John Oliver's, you know, dingo speech mm-hmm. that really did things. But at some point in time, the White House did come in and say, hey, look, a lot of people are really upset about this. This is becoming an issue. Can we look at this? And then Wheeler did look at Title II. But before then, he had people on his staff who were already advocating for Title II. And this was not a foreign proposal. It's just one that he was like, eh, I'm not really that into it. Can we do it in some other way? This is going to cause a lot. Because he knew right, the drama.
Yeah, he was right to try to find another way, but there was no other way. And that judge told him.
Yeah. And... so yeah, if we want Congress to go back and deal with the Telecommunications Act, but right now it feels like all we are doing in Congress, and this has been this way for a while, I'm not going to blame it just on this administration, we're just like, we're fighting back against a status quo that is ancient, and anytime we try to move a step forward, we're just making these stupid knee-jerk laws to like put us back. I just, it's so frustrating.
Well,
this
is our particular bailiwick, net neutrality. And of course, I have a big stake in it. You all have a big stake in it because we provide content on the internet. And if, you know, this is why we care. If Comcast were to say Netflix isn't going to count against your bandwidth cap, and Comcast has, I think, draconian bandwidth caps. A terabyte doesn't sound like a lot. It is not much. That sounds like a lot. It's not. If Comcast were saying, good news, Netflix will not count against your bandwidth cap, but Twit would, and that in its very essence is net neutrality, you know, non-neutrality, then it would be harmful to me and my business. Twit exists because you can get bits from the internet easily, right? And so does search engine land, so does marketing engine land, so does the IoT podcast, so does, you know, so we are very much impacted by this.
And it's much more efficient. As a Republican, you would think having to go and do a separate deal with every ISP to make sure your bits made it to the end consumer is time consuming, it's expensive, etc. So it doesn't even pass the efficiency test from that perspective.
I would love to see Congress take this up. Let's take up this stupid Freedom Act, because I think that we would then write to our members of Congress, as we've shown that we're capable of doing. We showed it. Tom Wheeler was convinced by more than a million comments on Title II.
You know, I got a car yesterday. It was Fasten. It wasn't Uber or Lyft. So those are not in Austin. But my driver, I was talking to the driver, and he was going out of the country. He said, yeah, you know, I'm really upset right now about net neutrality.
Yay!
I was like, tell me more about your thoughts here. I couldn't believe I was having a conversation with a normal person. And they brought it up, not me. It's very exciting for me.
Good.
I kind of scared him a little with my passion.
And people who watch this should be. And I would love to see Congress take this up. I would love to see Congress not only take this up, but also look at taking up improving the competitive landscape among internet service providers. Because part of the reason this is an issue is you don't have choice. I mean, we're lucky here. We have SonicNet as our provider. Sonic doesn't have bandwidth caps, fights, you know, they do all the things right. So we have an internet service provider that believes in net neutrality. But at home, I don't have that choice. And most people in this country don't have the choice. 86% of internet users in the United States have two internet service providers to choose from, their cable company and their phone company, neither of which, in the case of the big companies, support net neutrality.
I'm trying to think if there was a way to do it where you likened it to getting phone calls. I just have to play with the metaphor a lot more. But like, you know, one way of describing it is as if you were to say to someone, hey, telemarketer is going to be able to call you all they want, and it's not going to use any of your minutes for phone. But if people you know and love want to call you, it's going to cost them a lot more money.
Good analogy.
You know, and people, I think, would be like, what do you mean it's going to cost them a lot more money just to call my phone number? It's not like a paid number. Well, you know, they haven't paid us, so we have to charge them more or whatever. So, you know, there may be some ways of playing with it along like that because, you know, people in terms of how people think of it as utilities.
It
goes to the same thing with the privacy stuff. It's like the ISP I'm buying, like I'm buying my electricity. I'm not expecting then that like my data gets sold to telemarketers. I'm not expecting that if I want to buy electricity that I'm going to have to pay less if I use a certain appliance, you know, or I have to pay more if I want to use an appliance, not because the appliance is inefficient, but can you imagine if you had a house and you're like, well, I want to put in all Whirlpool appliances. And they're like, oh, you're going to use Whirlpool appliances? We're going to charge you twice as much for electricity. And you'd be like, why? They use the same electricity as like another appliance. Well, we don't have a deal with Whirlpool. Right? Like, what? I don't care you don't have a deal with Whirlpool or not. I'm buying electricity from you. What I want to put into it doesn't make a difference.
Oh. But the consumer won't actually even see those trade-offs because someone like Leo has to make them and he's probably going to, you can't pass the cost of internet content exactly down to the users.
No, because I'm free.
Well,
so, and you are too. And frankly, so is Danny. So, how could we do that? You know, we're screwed.
It's Farhad Manjoo in the Times did a column where he was trying to frame it as an issue of consumers versus big corporations, at its clearest, that is what it is. But we're arguing for consumers. We're arguing that we're arguing in favor of something they haven't seen yet.
They don't know that there's a problem.
We're arguing, yes, against the unknowns. Right. So you might not get the hottest, coolest new service. Snapchat might not exist. And people are like, Snapchat exists. I'm cool. So it's a very hard thing. And I can't believe we're here again. Again, see, this is my theme for the show. How did I get here again? Why is this happening?
Stacey, rewind.
This is the show I realize I've lived all of this before and I didn't enjoy it the first time.
Yeah, we have. Well, as you point out, it is not an official bill yet. It is a proposal. Well, it says they submitted legislation.
They submitted legislation, but, you know.
A bill becomes a law. I don't.
If you find enough sponsors, you can get a bill.
Nine sponsors, nine senators. Yes. That seems enough.
And then they're going to have to vote on it and then. Or does it go to a committee?
I think it goes to committee first, and then
they vote.
The committee sends it.
And I'm off to committee, and I'm standing on line with a lot of other bills just to bide my time.
I didn't pay attention to that. Actually, I'm Just a Bill on Capitol Hill came after reading. What was it? It was
It was Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock came after my time. You know what? This is
play
where,
this. I was going to say play it, Leo.
I'm going to because I'm sure it's on.
It's out there.
A bill.
I showed it to my daughter.
I'm sure it's on the YouTube, right?
Well, I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a bill. Hey, Bill, now you're a law.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Schoolhouse Rock.
Woo. You sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Uh-huh. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
Who is that sad little scrap of paper?
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot.
You know what? I have never seen that.
Really? Oh,
I know it because everybody so of great. Your age sings, I'm so just a bill on Capitol Hill.
It taught you so much.
It did.
Like, if only more people could learn it.
Well, now I know it's got to get out of committee, right?
We got to find the Schoolhouse Rocks people and have them do a song about net neutrality.
John Oliver did the best one, right? That's the
he
one.
Did. Yeah. But that was like a 6-minute effort.
And a lot of work. And, you know, he's obviously a raging liberal, so I can't trust him.
He's not authoritative by Google standards.
Not by my standards, man. I can't trust that man. He's all for regulation, government regulation. All right. Enough. We got the point. Keep in touch with your Congress critter. And when they haven't opened for comment yet, Ajit Pai's proposal. But when they do, we will let you know exactly how. And the other place to go and stay on top of this is EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Right on the front page, the FCC wants to eliminate net neutrality. We can't let that happen. They will tell you everything you need to know. These are great people. It's the number one nonprofit defending digital privacy, free speech, and innovation. And they're nonpartisan. But they really, you know, they tell you how you can get involved. Don't surrender the internet. And it looks, this is really good. This is really good. Email your representatives. Better yet, call them.
Call them. Always call.
It's easy.
I'll even call mine, even though.
Is Ted Cruz your, he's one of your senators. Who's the other one?
Yeah, both John Cornyn and Ted Cruz are my.
That's it.
They're both sponsors.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that spanky?
But, you know, I call them all the time. I even call my representative who sent us a letter saying that, you know, he's actually okay with what Trump's doing in every aspect of his administration. I still call him.
It's really,
I was about to say hopeless, Sisyphean.
I feel like it's Sisyphean. I feel like it's almost out of our control at this point. And sometimes I kind of wish that, you know, they could get everything they want so they could see how crappy life would be.
That happened.
But then we're stuck with it.
you see that in, what is it, Kansas? There have been some lovely stories written about.
Oh, yeah, Kansas is a good example,
I mean, when they get everything they want. Anyway, hey, let's talk about.
Let's talk about why I just got a Google Pixel and it won't let me choose Hangouts as my default messaging app.
Why can't you use Hangouts?
I don't know, because it's a Google Fi phone, and Google Fi text messages come in as Hangouts, but they apparently don't want me to use it to send out as a message. I have to use Android Messenger or Facebook.
But there was a bug with that.
I don't think it's a bug. I think this is the new thing.
Are you a Google Voice user?
Yes.
Well, I've got a Google.
And this is a Google Fi. This is a Fi phone. Go ahead. Go in your Pixel.
I've used Hangouts on it just fine.
I know, but no. I'm just saying, go into apps, choose your default apps, and it's, you know, where it says SMS app. What are your choices? Well, in my case, Facebook Messenger, Messages, which is Android Messages, and Signal, because those are the three messaging apps I have installed, not Hangouts.
But what does making it the default do for you anyway?
It means that if you send an SMS, it goes through Android Messages. And
but why wouldn't you send your SMS from Hangouts?
I can, but it's not the default.
Yes, you can. Just use Hangouts.
On my dock, the Hangouts is the messaging app on my dock.
So when you send from Hangouts, you're sending from Hangouts. So the problem is when you receive, but if you've clicked on Google Voice, redirect anything from Google Voice to Hangouts, then it'll come into Hangouts.
It's a Fi phone.
It doesn't matter that it's a Fi phone. That's just a SIM card. Right?
Well, I'm using Google Voice.
No, I'm telling you, that's how we'll fix it. That's how I fix it.
Switch from Hangouts to a new text messaging app.
But you don't need to switch. You're happy with what you're doing.
I know, Google.
Just use the. I don't have the little thing in front of me to show you, but just go into Hangouts and make sure you've ticked.
I know what you're talking about. No, I know what you're talking about. And I am, and I still am. And text messages now come to both Android Messenger and Hangouts.
Well, I haven't had this problem.
Well, go ahead and try it. Maybe you haven't updated the latest version of Android 7.1.2.
Connect Hangouts in Google Voice, right?
Receive. No. Look in your phone. Look in your Pixel phone. You can no longer make Hangouts your default SMS app.
Never used it as my default. I never set it in the first place. So.
Oh, all right. So you get your SMS messages in two places.
Well, I don't think so.
I don't know. It's confusing.
I'll have to go look.
Google's dropping SMS support from Hangouts.
I can't go look right now. I'm on the phone.
But
yeah, but that wasn't the same thing. But that was for Google Voice people. And that's not for Google Voice
people. No, five people were exempted. I understand. I'm not a Google Voice person because I lost my stand. I am and I'm not. If I go to watch, you know this. If you go to voice.google.com, watch. Go ahead, watch.
You have to log out of Google Voice.
It brings you to Project Fi.
It's a freak nightmare. If you have Google Voice on one account and you have Google Fi, or Fi as I like to call it.
Why?
On another account, you can never be logged in. You got to totally log out of that Google Fi account.
But I don't want to log out. I'm using Google Fi.
But what do you care on Google Fi on the web?
Because this is how I see my billing and my thing.
Well, just open it up in an incognito tab. Or why are you going to Google Voice anyway on the web? You only need to do it once.
Okay.
I have Google Hangouts on my desktop.
Have you ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
No. Oh, do not get me going on Google and the nightmare that it is with Google Voice. And just even when they rolled out the new app, it was a piece of crap because it looks cleaner. But do you want to send animated GIFs with Gboard? No, you don't get to do that with Google. So I'm like back on Google Hangouts. And I would abandon Google Voice and Google Handouts and all the mess that they've got out there. No one knows what they're doing. And like you say, you try to go to Google Fi. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're going to Google Voice, but you were Google Fi on another account. You could never, ever go. And you're like, oh, my God, what is wrong with you? Oh,
and I guess why, I didn't get them started.
At this point, can't I have a Google Fi account with a Google account that is like a Google Docs work, whatever, Gboard, whatever they're calling the new stuff. Oh, G Suite. Got a G Suite account? No Google Fi for you. Why? I don't know. We're Google. We can't handle the fact that people who pay us money to have services can't actually get to use all the services we'll give everybody else for free. So, yeah, I got some issues with Google and their big messed up thing. But I've worked around them as best as I can because, you know, when I was in Japan, I turned on my Google Fi phone. I had internet and it worked. And I had Google Voice so I could still get phone calls from the U.S. and I could send out messages. And that was very convenient. So I live with it. I endure it just for those occasional overseas trips. But it could be better.
Wow, Danny, that felt really cathartic. I enjoyed that a lot.
Let it out. Let it all out.
I mean, I kind of want like a t-shirt of you doing this.
Oh, it is embarrassing though, because Google Voice is such a great service, has potential to be such a great service, and they've just shoved it off into nowhere land. I know. You're just like, what is wrong? And my only guess is because they just don't think they can make any money off of it.
But but I ask everybody this. I go down the street. I ask the guy in the 7-Eleven, what's going on with Google's messaging strategy? Do you know, Danny? Because Stacy and I don't know.
It's like, how do those conversations
We have like 20 different apps.
They usually say, well, if you buy a slushy, we could talk about net neutrality.
Why don't they just launch an app, call it Messenger, because everybody else gets to call their apps generic names, or call it Google Messenger, and roll everything into one and make it work. I don't need Allo over here Hangouts over
Allo
there.
Allo would make actually a very nice default messaging app. I have to think there's some external force being applied here. Maybe antitrust regulations or something. Maybe they're worried about the EU or something.
I find it so hard, though, because it's not like they have any huge stake on the messaging platform, right?
Maybe it's carrier pushback. I don't know. I don't know.
But it's a mess. And if they launch at I.O. another messaging app, I'm going to lose my...
I can't wait to see that.
Google I.O. is coming up. It's only a few weeks out. I will be there. Jeff Jarvis will be there. Stacy, you're not going to I.O. this year.
I'm not. You know, I'm supposed to be here. I think I might be hosting your live chat.
That would be
chatter.
Awesome. I was going to ask you to do that. That's fantastic.
So, Karsten's already on it.
Good. And
you got good people.
We'll be sitting in the audience, and maybe we'll call afterwards and be part of Twig. And I think we have a room at Google. Chris DeBona is helping us again this year. After the keynote, go over to the room and do This Week in Google. Because it's Wednesday, right? The keynote's Wednesday.
Are you going to pull on interesting Google people into the room? You should.
Well, last year we got Matt Cutts in. I don't think he's around on campus anymore. By the way, does anybody know what? I know Matt.
Where
is
in the world is Matt Cutts?
Right. I know he's the interim director of the government data service or whatever they call it, but U.S. data server. But what exactly is he? Or is he digital service? Is he still there? Is he doing anything?
He could tell you, but he would have to kill you.
I feel like.
And by kill you, I mean metaphorically with all internet data.
I asked Karsten and Tanya to reach out to Matt and say,
He's still doing that. He's still there.
Is he?
He's still doing there. Yeah.
That's got to be a thankless task.
Well, you know, I think he sees it as I'm doing good work for America.
Didn't the president just announce that he is he's got a new technology board advising him, and he's asked everybody, including Google, to be on it? No word yet about whether anybody is going to be on
it. I think Jared's going to run that board, too. So
Jared's in charge, man. He's the guy who can do it all.
Yep.
Elon... maybe. I don't know. There is, you know, there's the Business Advisory Council, but there's now a Technology Advisory Council. There it is. Transform and modernize U.S. government. Did nobody tell him that Matt Cutts is over in the basement with the U.S. Digital Service with that mission?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same kind of mission, but maybe it is. I don't know.
And Code for America and...
Well, and there's
I get the impression that people over in that... I get the impression people over in that basement are just keeping their heads down, hoping no one notices them.
Wow, just please continue our funding.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, let's talk about Google's alphabets, I should say, results. The results are in. Google's growth in advertising, the ad business, was, 18%? I have to pull it up because I'm doing this from memory. Alphabet quarterly results. But what's interesting is the other businesses. So advertising is its primary business, obviously. But other businesses were also doing pretty well, including, the Pixel phone. Let me see. Here we go. Alphabet
Didn't
earnings.
The guy in charge of Pixel phone leave?
Yes, he
Did
left.
I see that?
He was only there 6 months.
Okay.
He said...
That did happen.
Job done. Have fun. And he left. I guess...
It does have a new name.
Pixel? Yeah, he changed the name. That was it. Mobile search, big. Ongoing strength. YouTube driving ad sales higher. Sales on Google Play hardware and cloud. That's the other growing substantially.
It's so tiring hearing about mobile search at this point. It's almost as if we're in 2001 and they're
mobile
going.
Search web is search.
Web search is big. Yeah. Well, duh, we know that now. What?
Advertising
in the sky.
Advertising revenue up from $18 billion to $21 billion year over year. Net income up to, this is in 3 months, kids, $5.43 billion. That's up from $4.2 a year ago. Nice little bit of growth there, $1.2 billion. They made an extra $400 million a month. And every geography... Revenues up in the U.S., Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia, Pacific. Alphabet traffic acquisition costs in the Google network. Wow, this is interesting. What is that, Danny? Traffic acquisition costs, $4.63
billion.
I believe
that's the amount of money that they pay to AdSense people.
So that's their outbound AdSense. Well, that's a lot of money.
Well, if they made more money off of it. I think one of the big charts I saw was that their percentage of income that they're generating off of their network continues to go down, whereas the amount of money they're making off of their owned and operated properties is going up. So, you know, they're becoming less dependent on the web as a whole. Or they're just figuring out ways to make even more money off of their own sites.
Other bets, that's Google Fiber. This is all the stuff Ruth Porat cut. Google Fiber,
Nest,
Waymo, the life sciences division, and venture capital investing. Now, I wish they'd break that out because I'm thinking it's probably venture capital made the most money. But revenue was up from $165 million a year ago to $244 million. Profits, no. Revenue, yes. Profits didn't.
Fiber's expensive.
It's expensive. Not making any money on it, but there's money coming in. There's just more money going out. Somebody I know, I think it's Alex Wilhelm, characterizes that as how much it cost them to generate the $224 million And it cost them well over $1 billion to create that $244 million revenue.
Well, and that makes sense because
there are other bets, yeah.
Well, not just other bets, but those are physical goods. I mean, cost of goods sold is a legitimate thing. And then in telco, your CapEx is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah.
Anyway. I like physical stuff.
Yes.
I'm like, yay.
Yes.
But it's a crummy business.
Alphabet spends the vast majority of its money running its search business, which drives 99% of the revenue. But they also spent $4.4 billion on other bets. Google Ventures, Google Fiber, Calico, which is the how to live forever company, Verily, which is the glucose sensing contact lens company, Nest, you know what Nest is, and then something I hadn't heard of, Capital G, which is...
Isn't that the new name for Google Ventures?
Oh, maybe. Capital G?
So does Google have an additional R&D department?
No, X is the R&D, right? That's the moonshots, right? Isn't it?
Okay, because if you look at this like R&D expenditures, it's fairly in line.
Corporate
between 5% and 10% of revenue.
You see, if I look at this graph, and I think this is previous quarter, this is last year. You see this graph, the red part, the little tiny red parts, that's other bets. So it is. It's a fraction of the total, revenue and costs, you know. What, Danny, is there a search engine R&D? There must be. They've got to try stuff.
Yes, but to the degree that it's broken out from other stuff, I don't know.
Right.
I really don't know. I mean, you get things like they would have Rank Brain that came out of their artificial intelligence group, and that's all kind of R&D. And then
I would think AI and ML would be a big R&D expenditure. Voice?
That might be an investment in product. You could look at that as an investment in product development, though, easily.
Of course you could.
Because, a lot of the techniques they're using, it's not at the research level anymore. Even stuff like computer vision and neural network type stuff, that's actually been established for a while. We just didn't have the compute power to actually make it widely applicable for a reasonable amount.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert in like R&D and what's classified as that, but those don't feel, that feels not crazy.
Nice growth though, overall. Increase in revenues year over year, 22%. Pretty nice. Operating margin, 27%. Get this, though. Effective tax rate. It's up. It was 18%. They now pay 20% in taxes. How much do you and I pay in taxes? A little more than that.
A lot.
A little bit more. I would love a 20% tax rate.
You got to hide more of it in Ireland.
I think I got to get that Irish subsidiary, that Irish Twit Ireland. Got to get that going.
I will go. I volunteer to go set up your studio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll give you the license for all the shows. And we'll send all the income over to Twit Ireland.
And we could hire people with Irish accents to talk.
Oh, they'd all talk like that. It'd be so sweet.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Oh, you'd love that. And she likes it, too. They'll all talk. It'll all be like you're in Irish spring country all the time.
I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. Facebook opens up 360-degree live streaming to everyone. So the next time you murder somebody, you could do it in 360.
That's tasteless. Bad.
That was really tasteless.
Bad. Okay.
But you, come on, admit it. You were thinking that.
I actually wasn't.
Okay.
But
you are now.
I was thinking, now I am. You're right.
Now you are.
Speaking of that, Facebook is hiring another 3,000 people to pull down violent and inappropriate content. Do we think it's going to work?
I saw that. It's one of those things you feel like people can't solve the problem. Facebook's too far, too big.
And I feel like, what a horrible job.
Oh, it is. And we know people who do that. And you can only do it for a few months. It wears on you.
Yeah. So,
and then you have to confess how terrible it is to Ars Technica, and then somebody that you told Ars Technica about it tells Google, and then you get fired.
Yeah, exactly. You know the story. Happens every day. Actually, some people enjoy it. We know somebody who does this, and she says, "I just get, you get used to it." It's just another day at the office. I like surfing Facebook, she says.
Wow. Well, you know, cops get used to seeing all kinds of crazy stuff.
And it doesn't wear on them psychically.
I don't know. I feel like some cops it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. What else do we have? Anything else that's super exciting that we want to get to?
I was looking at a rundown from 6 weeks ago. So let's start over.
Going back in the time machine.
Yeah, I thought those were kind of old stories.
Hey, Google might start its own job search engine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've had them testing some stuff that's been showing up.
What do you think of this thing? So Twitter did not get the NFL this year, but they are now launching a Twitter Live feed that will include lots of stuff, including some sports, some technology. Nilay Patel is going to do a weekly gadget show. Bloomberg will be there. Bloomberg has appeared in the past on Twitter Live. And Live Nation, BuzzFeed, the WNBA. Do you go to Twitter.com to watch TV? Is that what people are doing these days?
I do not. I mean, the only thing I would go to Twitter maybe to watch TV with commentary on like the Oscars. Or maybe, but not really. I mean, like Twitter is my second screen when I'm watching television if I want to do TV in Twitter.
Yeah.
But when I want to
watch TV, I go to TV, but I'm really old.
You are so old fashioned. But the young,
that is old.
Young people today, I think the young people today maybe aren't against. I can't for some reason play video.
I can see it. Like I didn't get the NFL thing, but then I hate football, so who cares? But yeah.
No, like, I love football, and I still wouldn't watch it on Twitter. It's like,
I know,
why?
But for example, like if I've been out and there was one of the debates were going on, and I'm hitting Twitter to see what's going on.
That's maybe different, yes.
And I get the live feed. So, I mean, I guess there's potential there. You know, they're throwing things against the wall.
Oscars. I would have paid money, actually, to see the Met costume gala.
Yeah. So that's the key. They need to find content that is not on your TV, maybe.
Oh, yes. Because getting my, you know, obviously I could see things happening, but getting the commentary in real life, and it needs to be bigger. I mean, like right now I go to Twitter and I'm seeing a live soccer game.
It's the CONCACAF U17 knockout.
Hey, Leo, I'm really sorry, but I've got to jump off now.
Oh, that's right, Danny.
Oh, that's
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Sorry, Danny.
I'm really, really sorry. I'll
you know,
try
before
to make sure
you go, do you have a pick you want to share with us? Anything you... excited about?
You know, Google's got this new thing where you can get your recipes read to you through Google Home.
Have you tried it yet?
I tried it and it wasn't working, but it wasn't showing up for me yet. So I'm still keeping an eye on it. And
how does, you know, does it sounds, pause when you...
It's
I mean,
supposed to pause. Like you'll do a search, say, send this recipe to Google Home, and then Google Home is supposedly supposed to read the recipe to you and stop. So I don't know. I'm going to check it out, but, you know, it might be worth checking out if you're...
As soon as I can get it. How is it rolling out? Is it a... slowly rolling out, or is it just not here yet?
Yeah. I mean, my wife cooks a lot, and I told her about it. And she says, I don't want Google telling me how to cook.
Oh, no, I would love it. I would love it. No, that would be great if it would say, okay, now use an electric mixer and combine the cream cheese, honey, milk, and lemon zest.
If they manage to get Delia Smith recipes, I think she'll change her mind on that, but we'll see.
See, imagine if it was Delia's voice. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm really sorry.
See you, Danny. Thank you.
Bye, Danny.
I'm in longer for it. You guys have a good run to the show.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We also heard that the Alexa will soon be able to whisper, bleep out swear words, and change its pitch.
Developers, did you play the whisper?
No.
You got to play the whisper. It's on, I think it's...
Here it is. Yeah. Ready? Alexa whispering a post.
Amazon is trying to make its Alexa voice assistant sound more human.
Oh, my God. It's so awful.
You wouldn't want it for a long time, but a little bit. The password is...
Like every head in the room wouldn't turn around when it hurt. I'd be like, oh my God, is like Satan over there in the corner speaking? What's happening?
We've had, I mean, ever since I've seen synthesized voice, there's been markup that you could add to synthesized voice to make it, you know, sound more natural. But it's nice that Amazon's allowing developers to do that.
Well, and bleeping out swear words is nice as someone who has a child who is morally offended by swear words.
But
they pop up.
What?
Like they pop up in like results sometimes. Like if you're, oh, that's
okay.
Google.
So, I don't. Yeah, but see, I don't think that that's what this is. This is gives you a markup language for the results coming back from your query. Whether you know, like, okay, I play Jeopardy. Right. And but actually, that's not a good example because it doesn't use the Echo voice. It would be something that uses, 20 questions. It uses the Echo voice. And then you could simulate a bleep. But it doesn't, after the fact, bleep content. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you'd be listening to Wikipedia entries and it would bleep it. It's the developer that has to put the bleeping in.
Ah, okay. So, I misunderstood that. My
it's kind of like, you know what it's like? It's like this the strike through markup in HTML. You can use it as for an effect, I guess.
Got it.
All right, that's cool. But that'd be good for recipes. I'm going to tell you what to do next.
or getting that murder advice when you're
fill the hot tub up to the highest level. And then
I think I just told like whispers.
And she was a little bit, that was like a little bit.
That was
like
a creepy whisper.
A drill in your ear. Yeah.
Yeah, it hurt.
Ow.
I'm not used to that.
All right. Now it's just you and me. So let's talk about Tesla.
Okay. I was like, Tesla or IoT?
I can do IoT. We'll do IoT.
No. Let's do Tesla first. What's the Tesla stuff? I didn't scroll down that far.
Tesla trucks coming.
Okay.
Consumer Reports marked Tesla down because in the Hardware 2 platform, many of the things that you and I have, well, you don't have autopilot, but many of the things people with Hardware 1 platform, the original Hardware platform, who had autopilot were used to things like the car would stop before it hit something automatically.
Yes.
They took that out in Hardware 2 because they didn't have confidence in Hardware 2, which I would be mad if I bought a Tesla. I think it started in October. I'd be kind of angry it didn't do a lot of the things that my older Tesla did. Anyway, Consumer Reports lowered its rating, saying this is dangerous. And so Tesla rolled out an update. They fixed it.
Well, I was going to say, auto braking is a feature in a lot of luxury cars. I remember a friend of mine test driving my Tesla, and he actually was trying to drive into a wall before I was like, hey, it doesn't have that.
Wow. hey, hold on. You know, it's not just luxury cars now. I've been seeing ads for Subarus or something that does it as well.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, there is a car. I don't know. I thought it was an Audi.
Maybe. Well, my Audi had that. No, actually, though, I don't think it would stop. The Teslas actually stop, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, they try to stop.
Yeah, they make the attempt.
Yeah.
I was excited about the boring tunnel stuff.
Did you see the boring video?
I was.
This is science fiction. This is not going to happen.
Is it any more science fiction than the Neuralink stuff?
No, that's pretty science fiction-y too. So the idea is that because Elon got
Elon hates traffic.
He was really pissed off because he drives from the Tesla headquarters in L.A. to the SpaceX headquarters, and the traffic's bad. What a shock! So he imagined the idea: what if we had tunnels and. Now, so the Tesla pulls up to an elevator, which is a parking space, which, by the way, okay, let me just pause this for a second. The car goes down in an elevator. Is there a big hole in the street now where that car was? And is somebody going to drive into it and crush me? Inquiring minds want to know. So it goes down in the elevator. Okay, they quickly close the door on the elevator, but quickly enough, again, inquiring minds want to know. It goes down in the elevator, and then the elevator continues onto the tunnel. You don't get to drive in the tunnel. You get to ride in a little carrier that you whiz through the tunnel and get where you're going at upwards of, 200 kilometers, 124 miles an hour. But really, are we going to, there's a bus. See that? You could get on a bus too. But seriously, there's no way we're drilling giant holes underneath LA. Like, you can only imagine. See how they switch away before you see the hole in the ground?
Yeah. Well, and it would have to be another platform like sliding in for delivery too, because otherwise...
Right.
You know...
We just got a hole in the ground. Anyway, it doesn't matter because you know what?
It's science fiction.
Science fiction.
Oh, we're not there yet.
It's just like Robert Heinlein's conveyor belt sidewalks.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that? The roads must roll.
Sure. Make it happen. Make it so. I've been in an airport.
If you were wondering, as you might have listening to this show, how we feel about the intelligence of our federal government, and in particular the Senate. Senate staffers' ID cards don't have smart chips. They have pictures of smart chips.
Actually, I think that's kind of brilliant. It's the equivalent of sticking an ADT lawn sign in your yard.
Without having any security. Yeah.
It's like, let's save some money. Give a little bit. I mean, we are all about security theater. I see that this just falls right in line with that. So, but that's just me. I'm just cynical as all get out.
They printed a picture of the chip on it. If you're a Senate employee, it's just a picture, not a chip, just a. Really? Come on. And they, by the way, it's really not great security since everybody now knows.
Well, yes. Now they're going to have to like pay up to Gemalto or whomever to get their chips.
What the what?
Oh.
Crazy talk. Hulu has launched its TV service.
Really?
Live TV service, $40. This is YouTube has $35, right?
Yeah. Does Hulu have things Hulu does?
Hulu has things other Hulu... It has all the other Hulu stuff, like Fargo. No. What is that? What did I pay? Oh, Handmaid's
Fargo's
Tale.
Fargo's on
here. Handmaid's Tale I had to buy a Hulu for.
That is very good.
It's a little dark.
Well, yeah, it is.
But
it's not.
It is very good. I agree.
It's not fluffy.
It's not fluffy. Here's the deal. Over-the-top TV packages. I never heard of Fubo TV. Maybe not the best name. But there's Sling YouTube DirecTV Now, which is the AT&T product, Hulu Live, PlayStation View. It's a little, Hulu Live is, it's up there. It's the same cost as PlayStation View, but you get 60 channels. And I guess you get live locals. Depends where you are, probably.
You know, if you look at this as the disaggregation of the TV, or the triple play, or the, I guess it's no longer the triple play. Yeah. I mean, basically, they're taking that revenue from the cable guys, presumably. I don't think they're actually yet. But when we see that, I'm like, I keep wondering, do we have, as consumers, between $150 and $180 a month allocated to broadband and television in our brains? We've already split out phone and pay a lot more for wireless.
Right.
So are we going to split out TV and end up paying more for it? And then broadband is like $120 for people?
I think that's where you're headed, right?
Well, I hope not.
So Hulu does not have Viacom, which means it doesn't have AMC, The Walking Dead. Hulu's MTV. Owned by Disney, 21st Century Fox, Comcast, and Time Warner. So there's lots of sports. ESPN is, of course, a Time Warner, Fox Sports.
I thought ESPN was Disney.
I'm sorry, Disney. You're right, ABC, Disney. And Disney's in the last two. Yeah, it's Disney. You're right. Absolutely. But AMC, Viacom, and other programmers apparently talking about they're doing their own sports-free version of Hulu. Well, there you go. And as far as local affiliates, they have some, but not every market. They say they will have every market in the coming months. Most of those deals will get made in the coming months.
I feel like there's so much on, and I'm, again, this is just me being old and maybe not working in an office with people, but I'm okay waiting to see the shows I'm excited about, or I just buy it.
You can, that's the truth, though. You can, for instance, Fargo, if you can't watch it on FX now, you know it will be available for purchase soon. FX actually often does it in the original run.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
So, that's how, I mean, I'm watching The Americans right now, season 5. I bought it.
I kind of am willing to pay for it if it's not too expensive, because it's usually like $29 for a season because there's no ads. And you can't binge watch it till the season's over, but it would be nice if you could just binge watch it now and get it over with.
Yeah, this season is a little slow, actually.
It is. You've got to wait a week between shows? What are we talking? Is this 1992? Like, what are we talking
so
here?
Hard. Like my daughter tells me, I would hate to be one of those families who has to watch TV shows when they're on.
You know, when I was a kid, we had to wait till Thanksgiving to see The Wizard of Oz. You probably don't even remember that.
I don't. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Everything.
Your childhood was rough. I was thinking y'all hung around the campfire.
And Danny Kaye would have to come on every time and say, now it's going to start in black and white, but it's going to be in color. Every time. Actually, wow. I think they recorded that once and they just stuck it at the beginning every time.
That
all right,
makes more
your
sense.
Chance to talk about the Internet of Things. What's the latest news in the IoT sphere?
So this actually came out, I think it was late last week, maybe Thursday, but Cloudflare, which is that a sponsor? Is that
yes,
what that says sponsor?
We love Cloudflare.
Okay. I'm like, is that what that is? So they introduced an IoT security product called Orbit. And I was kind of keen on this because I'm sitting here thinking about how do we secure the Internet of Things. And I've liked Cloudflare forever. I think it's a really interesting.
We. Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
I was like, I liked them before I even worked for you.
So
guys.
We talked a little bit yesterday on Security Now about this. And Steve was not completely clear what they were planning to do. But it sounds like this Cloudflare product is for IoT providers, not end users.
It is. Okay. So I talked to Matthew Prince because I was like, what the heck is this? Because all the coverage was kind of not, it didn't tell me anything. So they're trying to basically, okay, you know, Cloudflare works by you direct your servers to their servers.
Right.
And then they absorb everything. So the idea is you do the same thing if you're, and it only works for manufacturers, and you build this into your product where your product goes through Cloudflare's servers. So what it prevents is things like Matthew Prince over at Cloudflare told me that it would prevent something like Mirai because basically once it's detecting malicious activity, it stops it from going to your devices, right? So your devices aren't going to be sending stuff out. They're not going to be downloading malicious stuff. So this isn't an end-all be-all panacea. This is just one extra layer of security. It's very limited because right now, if you want to secure a device, you have to do it. The manufacturer has to do it, okay. Not the users. So like you and I who have our crappy network DVR, we're SOL. we can't secure that.
And that's really always been the problem is that these Chinese companies don't care and they don't secure their stuff. And they're the last ones that are going to pay for Cloudflare to
And we as them. Consumers don't care. And
we don't
pay for it. We don't pay for it. I mean, security has become an externality in this business. And that, just like protecting the environment, that's going to have to change. Or it doesn't, and we're all screwed. Right. Either way, these are our choices. Wow, this show got so grim. Do we have any
No, it's
happy
not grim.
News?
That's happy news. That they're doing it is fantastic. It's fantastic. Okay. I'm so thrilled. That we have this, and I think what's going to happen, I believe what's going to happen with IoT, and I think you've seen this, this happens with a lot of things, is that people will get wise to it, and they will start not buying the cheap Chinese knockoffs that don't work with anything else, and buy stuff from responsible companies like Nest. Don't
Maybe.
You think?
I never underestimate the lure of a cheap something or other.
Here's what's going to happen. At some point, Amazon or Google, maybe it'll be Microsoft, maybe it'll be Apple, is going to say, you're going to be able to control your home. You're going to be able to do it with your voice. Well, you can already do it with the Echo. And by the way, we're only going to support secure devices. So, if you want to use your Echo or your Google Home with your Internet of Things devices, look for the made for Google Home badge. And Google will have an app store. They will say, we vetted this, it's secure. I almost am certain that will happen in the next year as we get more and more IoT problems. And we've had massive IoT break-ins and issues. And we need the kind of, like, we're used to app stores, we're used to that notion. And by the way, what a great revenue opportunity for somebody to have a Google Home store with all of the approved devices in it.
Oh, I would hate to have this business model again. I hate the bifurcation of the mobile OS ecosystem. I don't really want to see it.
But it already is. It's already happened.
I know.
And in fact, it was almost invented by home automation with Zigbee and Z-Wave. And, it's endless. It's a Tower of Babel. So this would, in fact, maybe help consumers cut through
that. It would help.
Yeah.
You are right. Maybe I don't want Amazon dictating this. I would much rather have it be truly industry-wide with all of them working together. Yep. But, I also really like, clean air and water. So Let's see.
Any other IoT stuff in the news today?
Nothing that like.
That's a big one, I think. And that to me is the example of, in a way, a forerunner of what I think is going to happen. Is you're going to have companies like Cloudflare get involved in this and help make IoT secure, because otherwise it's a non-starter. People aren't going to use these things because they're going to see what a problem it is.
Oh, wait, I didn't see this last week and I feel like an idiot. Sirius acquired Automattic.
You didn't see it last week because it just happened, didn't it?
No, it says it happened April 27th.
Oh, but I don't think they announced it because I saw the story yesterday.
Okay. Maybe.
We love another sponsor, Automattic. They make those really great OBD2 dongles that you plug into your car and pair to your phone, and you get all sorts of information. It's an interesting buy for SiriusXM. They spent over $100 million on it. Well,
yeah.
I'm not sure why they wanted it.
You know, Sirius has, maybe they want to keep their position in the automobile, right? Because that's important to them.
So they're going to start doing telematics.
Yeah, so this data would be crucial to them, and it gives them, I guess, a dongle in the car. So, yeah, it is kind of weird, but it's not crazy weird.
I think I can understand that strategy. Sirium's got to find something, right? Because it's not a great business to be in.
Right.
So do telematics. Do, like, the OnStar stuff, and this would be a way to get that stuff working.
And you've got all this data that you can then sell to people, and that's independent data providers that are credible will be useful going forward. Because, you know, the car companies are like, I don't want to give all this to Google. They're going to just build their own cars.
There you go. There's a happy story. Here's another one.
Okay.
A drunk man arrested for knocking over the Silicon Valley crime-fighting robot.
I didn't know there was a Silicon Valley crime fighting robot, so I was like, delightful.
Yeah, this K5, this is the robot. It patrols parking lots, okay? It wanders around. It's got cameras on it. Can't really do anything. Along comes 41-year-old Jason Sylvain, allegedly slightly intoxicated, and he kicked it over and scratched it, by the way, so he's okay.
How much is the robot?
Oh, God, can you imagine? But anything, people are expensive, right?
Yes.
And the good news is...
Does it really sit behind this desk? I'm sorry. I have so many questions about this robot.
I don't know. I don't know if I have answers. This is the same one that rolled over at the toddler's foot, you may remember, a few months ago.
I have not seen this. I remember being struck in the San Jose airport when I was walking through that they had robots all around. And then I passed by like the little robot childcare center and I was just,
that's creepy.
They have people there. But I was like, what is happening? I felt like such a disconnect. Like Silicon Valley was just in this weird land.
In the airport now, many restaurants have little humanoid robots about 3 or 4 feet tall with holding menus that you can talk to and make reservations with.
What airport?
Well, SFO for one.
Really?
Yeah.
What terminal?
I think it was SFO. It might have been Oakland, but it's in the Bay Area. And it just stands there. Where was that? Was that in Oakland? It was funny because I saw a kid playing with it. And the kids, so this is interesting. Kids have no respect for robots. Apparently, there was an experiment in Japan where a robot was let loose to wander in a busy shopping mall and asked people, you know, to get out of the way. Excuse me. And the adults were very polite in Japan. They got out of the way. But the kids would kick it.
You're not the boss of me.
They would say, no, they were hurting the robot, which loudly protested, apparently.
We have no respect for robots. Remember that robot that, I think, was a Canadian sent it down to try to hitchhike?
Oh, that was so sad. Yeah, didn't make it across the U.S. That wasn't really a robot. That was just like a, you know,
junk.
A mop bucket with a hand. And some feet. Sorry. It didn't do anything. And it had a sign on it that said, please pick me up and take me to my next destination. But it got beat up.
Yeah. Humans are just jerks. What can we say?
This was a study it was called Escaping from Children's Abuse of Social Robots. They would often get violent, hitting and kicking, engaged in verbal abuse, calling the robot bad words. They didn't say what the bad words were, but they did mention one kid called the robot idiot 8 times. Bending the neck, hitting it with a plastic bottle, hitting it with a ball. You know, children are angry. and really, they can't take it out on adults. So if they've got an inanimate object, they're just going to hit it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hit it. Maybe I'm childlike. That's it in that way.
I can't picture my child hitting a robot.
They're blocked. You know what? It's in a group. See this? This is
Lord
classic.
Of the Flies.
It's Lord of the Flies. It's bullying behavior. They don't do it when it's a kid by herself. No problem. I'll get out of the way. No problem. Yep. Okay. No problem. But then you get 8 or 9 kids together. Watch what happens. They Lord of the Flies. They gang up on the thing. Okay. Now watch. Bullies. There's 4 of them. Now some other kids are coming over saying, "Oh, we can beat this up. Let's kill it. Kill the robot. Kill Piggy." Look at this. The kids are harassing the robot.
Wow.
Apparently happens more often with more kids and if no adults are around. And then here's Violet. Look at they're banging on its head. That kid kicked it. Hey, kid kicked it. Do you think this is just Japanese kids or do you think this would happen in the U.S.?
No, I imagine this would happen in the U.S.
Throw things at the road. Look at the guys dragging them away. Anyway, great study. I never saw that before. That's awesome.
The tonic to that is that cute little girl that saw the water heater and thought it was a robot.
Yeah. Yeah, do I have that video? Yeah, just imagine that. I don't have that video.
That's okay.
Finally, good news, MP3 is free. Free at last. It was 20 years ago on April 23rd that the Fraunhofer company in Germany invented MP3s and trademarked it. They own it. They licensed it. But as of April 23rd, 2017, that license is over. You can use MP3 anywhere, anytime without paying a fee, which is kind of news to all the people who've been doing that for the last 20 years.
They're like, wait, what?
I got to pay a fee?
Crap.
Yeah, it's over. You don't have to pay a fee anymore. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, will you do a pick? Do you have a pick? I have a pick.
I have a pick that's really good.
Good. I don't.
Well, should I come up with another pick?
No. I got one that's okay. Okay. Our show today, I tell you, I got something good. Get ready because you're going to get hungry. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. We love the Blue Apron. Imagine, if you will, you're going home at long, hard day. You're tired. You're starving. And you would love to have a luscious home-cooked meal. But you know what? You got to plan it. You got to shop for it. You got to go home and cook it. And you just end up going to McDonald's again. Now, alternate universe. You're starving. You're ready to have a delicious home cooked meal. You go home and they're sitting on your porch waiting for you. A lovely box from Blue Apron containing all the fresh ingredients to make 3 different home cooked meals, plus a recipe card and instructions. Everything you need, pre-portioned ingredients, never more than you need, so there's no waste. You can prepare it in 40 minutes or less. It's healthful. Less than $10 a person for the meal, which means, by the way, it's less expensive than shopping. Grocery stores are 60 to 70% more expensive because they have all that overhead. And you're getting delicious, high-quality ingredients from 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the United States. Sustainable, quality, delicious food. The number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service. They deliver to 99% of the continental United States. Sorry, Hawaii and Alaska. I'm sorry. But they want to make sure it's fresh. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them, and you choose the items from the website. But look at all the stuff on the menu. Baked spinach and egg flatbread with sautéed asparagus and lemon aioli. Beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice. Lisa and Michael, our 14-year-old, cooked the other night, and I was fasting that day, and it was torture. The house smelled so good. Crispy salmon and roast potato salad with pickled mustard seeds and creme fraiche sauce. Here's a vegetarian one. 3 cheese and baby broccoli stromboli. Oh, I love stromboli. With tomato and oregano dipping sauce, but I don't know how to make it. Now you will. Plans for couples and families. With kid-friendly ingredients, delicious meals. They don't repeat more than once a year. Is that the stromboli? Oh, it looks so good. Look at that. Three cheese and broccoli stromboli. Oh, my gosh. Now you, and the thing is, once you make it, you know how to make it again. And you know what to shop for. And so it really is a little mini cooking school among everything else. Check out this week's menu. Get three meals free with your first purchase. Yes. Three meals free when you go, and free shipping when you go to blueapron.com/twig. You don't have to do it every night. We get three meals a week. And often, by the way, we'll keep two and we'll give one to Lisa's parents who are older and who love it. They come over and say, any Blue Apron? You got any Blue Apron for us? So we'll give, because it's all packaged up. We'll give them the card and the stuff in a little bag. And they go home and they make it. And they love it. Blue Apron.
I was just going to say, we just made, again, not from the Blue Apron, but a favorite recipe there of ours that came from there.
Yeah. Well, that's the point, is you actually, it gives you the confidence to say, oh, I could do this. It's really not hard. And then you do it, and you have some new ingredients to play with, creme fraiche, stuff you maybe not seen before. I love it. BlueApron.com/twig. And yeah, if you have kids, getting them to cook is really great. That's part of education, I think. Michael really had fun. He did not enjoy washing the dishes afterwards, however. Gotta work.
There are a lot of dishes.
He did not. It wasn't bad, but he just, he does not. I don't know why. That's the chore he hates the most. I don't know why. I kind of like washing dishes. I shouldn't admit this in public.
No, I like washing dishes too. I hate drying them though.
No, right. Well, I just put them in the rack. I don't dry them.
Oh, see, I get yelled at when I do that.
Who yells at you? Andrew yells at you?
That yells at.
He's tell just him like, to get off his high horse. Air drying is the best.
I'm like, air drying. That's my thought.
I used to go, oh, honey, I'll wash them later. They have to soak.
Soak. Yes. My dad does that. These dishes need to soak. My mom's like, yeah, as long as they're not soaking tomorrow morning.
Exactly. So Lisa broke me of that habit. She said, I don't care as long as they're not here in the morning. She broke me of that habit because I used to soak them for several days sometimes.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Not cool.
Not cool.
Your pick of the week, Stacey Higginbotham. I'm going to talk in Irish for you now for the rest of the show to make you feel happy.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I know it's a beautiful accent.
It is. So my choice is a book this week because I've been traveling, so I haven't had a chance to test devices. Books, but it's a really good book.
What is it?
It's called The Night Ocean. It's by Paul Lafarge.
I bought the book that you talked about the last time, Lab Girl.
Oh, did you enjoy it?
I didn't. I bought it for my daughter who's studying bio.
You should read it too. It's a good book.
I will. She's loving it.
Oh, so good. Okay.
Paul, this sounds familiar. Paul Lafarge. Why do I know his name?
He's written other books. Let me tell you what other books he has written, because right now I'm not looking at that.
Is it? It's kind of. It says it's Lovecraftian.
So, okay, this is something I think anything Lovecraftian is hilarious.
Yeah, hilarious? It's spooky.
If you make a Cthulhu, I can never say the name, joke, I am the first person to like pop up and laugh.
Cthulhu is the guy with the octopus face, right?
Yes, the knitted cap. A friend gave me one of the
you
knitted
have a
caps
Cthulhu cap? Tentacles. Oh, man.
So I just, like, that's why I got this book. But it's really good. It's a mystery story. It's got a lot to like horror and science fiction. It's kind of Inception-esque. I don't want to give you too many things, but it's a really good book. I don't want to spoil anything.
And it's on Audible.
So there you go. It's on Audible.
I'm adding it to my list.
I'm looking at his books and I have not seen any of these other books. So, but he has written other books.
He wrote Moravigne. Moravigine. Well, wait a minute. Houseman, the artist of the missing, Luminous Airplanes.
I love
his titles, and apparently he works.
I like Luminous
Airplanes. He works with others as well. Apparently, it's the same.
It's the same dude,
Paul Lafarge, huh? He's a very interesting fellow. Is he French?
Mm-hmm. Oh, his Luminous Airplanes book looks like it's about programmers. Oh, it looks fascinating. All right. Maybe this will be my next recommendation.
Nice.
But no.
Have you ever wanted Mr. T to give you car directions?
Oh, I pity the fool who tries to give you car directions.
So
remember, I can't do right and left.
Yeah. Do you do, if you do Waze... they've added Mr. T to Waze. So you'll have to go in your Waze settings And then under advanced settings, there's sound and voice, and you have to change the voice directions. Now, Jane is the default. Now, the nice thing about Jane is she does street names. She's the only one who does street names. But let me turn up my sound. There's also Amy. Whoops. And then there, I got to go back in. Darn it. It didn't give me a sample. I was hoping they would give me a sample. But the newest sound and voice is Mr. T. Mr. T. Let's see if we can hear Mr. T. Should I get directions? Let's go somewhere. I need directions. Let's see. Directions to home. How about that? All
right. You want people to know where you live?
Sucker, and then make a left, sucker.
That sounds actually like everybody who's ever been in the car with me when I'm driving.
How do I get Mr. T to repeat that? Go back and do it again. Oh, man. Let's go home.
Make a left, sucker, and then make a left, sucker.
I imagine when I get home, it's going to say, you have arrived at your destination. I pity the fool who lives here.
Oh, excellent.
Mr. T on your ways. And that's free. There's no charge.
All right.
I told you I didn't have a really good pick. Actually, I had a bunch of picks and I didn't save them anywhere. Do you do this?
And I do this
all week long. I go, oh, I got to pick that. And then I didn't save them and I have no idea. I don't remember a thing.
It's the story of my life. The challenge for me is doing devices. It means like I have this pile of gadgets and I'm like, oh, I've got it. And during the show, actually, one of my picks, I guess it'll be for next week, arrived. I heard my dog barking and I saw it on my doorbell.
Oh,
I don't get it.
Well, do your daughter or her classmates, are they into fidget spinners?
Oh, yes, I have seen. There's a delay. Is that what it is in the fidget spinner, the Kickstarter one?
No. Well, there's a lot. Yes, the cube is now delayed, but you can go on Amazon and buy them. And I decided that we talked about this last week.
We did?
Did we? No.
Okay. A different show.
I decided to buy many different fidget spinners. To see, did one come? Oh, this is the one Burke got me. It's just a cheap 7-Eleven fidget spinner. But the idea is kids, apparently, your daughter's age are like going crazy about these in schools and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a variety of them. Didn't you tell me about the one with the moon and the Mars gravity?
No.
Who was that?
That sounds cool.
It was that Ashley Escatha? Maybe it was. Maybe it was on Twit. So I've gone out and ordered a number of these to do some comparisons. For instance, this one has ceramic bearings, and then
so it spins very nicely.
Yes, and they actually rate these via spin times. So maybe for next week we'll do fidget spinners.
Huh?
There's maybe even a website because you can spend hundreds of dollars on fidget spinners.
Wow, this fad has not made it to my daughter's school. She's
pray
super tactile and touchy.
She might like it. Well, you can get this one was like a few bucks, but you can spend a lot more.
We got our little clicker thingy. You tap it and it's square.
Yeah. I used to have one when I was a kid. It's like a cricket.
But I will. So if it's truly anxiety and autism, this is actually what took the cake for us and really works. Bring your hands like this and go start with one finger. Here, I'll do it this way. I am so loved.
Oh.
Or you do like, I can handle this.
Really?
Yeah. And you take a few moments, you take deep breaths and you're like, I can handle this.
Are you autistic?
No, but you know, sometimes I get very anxious.
Do you get anxious?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I can handle this. I think Twig's over. I'm glad you came today. Please come back next. I ran out of words.
But don't you feel calmer, even though you don't know?
I do. I'm much calmer.
See? All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Stacey Higginbotham's at StaceyOnIoT.com. She also does the IoT podcast at IoTPodcast.com with the great Kevin Toefel. And she's an expert on IoT. But you know what the truth is? She's expert on a lot of things. She's one of the best journalists out there, and we're really glad we could get her each and every week. Jeff Jarvis had the week off. He'll be back next week. He's traveling, right? He's somewhere. I can never remember where. He's always somewhere. He's like Waldo. Where's Jeff?
So you say Carmen San Diego.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where in the world is Carmen Jeff Jarvis? Also, thanks to Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land, searchengineland.com, for joining us today. Thanks to all of you for being here. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Please stop by and join us live. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video at the website, twit.tv/twig. Best find a podcast application. Some of them say Twit. Some of them just say podcast. Some of them say Stitcher. And subscribe, because that way you'll get it every single episode. It's always a lot of fun. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.